No surprise that our reading this morning is about the Magi. One we've heard many times, but perhaps hearing it again, there may be something new that we begin to understand. Chapter 2 of Matthew's Gospel. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? We observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and the scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judea. For from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.'" And then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time of the star's appearance. He then sent him to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word so that I also may go and offer him homage." When they heard the king, they set out. And there ahead of them went the star that they hoped that they had seen at its rising until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then opening their treasure chest, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. The Gospel of the Lord. In the light of the gospel story, story that we all know, I'd just like to point out at the beginning that the story of the Magi appears in Matthew's gospel only because he is very much interested in speaking to his very Jewish audience who is listening to this gospel. And he always draws from the Old Testament in Matthew to connect the promises that were made through the prophets about the Messiah and Jesus, so that people get the message very clearly that the Messiah that they've been hoping for generations and generations now has arrived in the person of Jesus. And the story itself is probably a fabrication in as much as, you just look at the timing. The child was born, the star appeared when the child was born, and he's still in the cradle here in the nativity scene in the barn, and they've journeyed from the far east all this way to come and be there. The timing is a little bit off, unless time stood still in Bethlehem while time ran with the rest of them. But you understand, the point is, and I think this is the major point, the Magi are the first Gentiles in the story of Jesus' life to come and recognize his divinity. Okay, they're the first Gentiles. The word has not gone out to the Gentiles yet about how they are welcomed into the kingdom through John the Baptist and Jesus. That hasn't happened yet. But they have come from the far east to worship. Remember what the prophet said in Isaiah 60, that all the tribes of the world will gather at your feet, will come to worship you on the mount, what they call the mount, the holy mount in Israel, where the temple is, the temple mount. That's where they will come. And here you have Matthew saying to those Jewish ears, it is now fulfilled because it's already happening, even among the Gentiles. Okay? Keep that as a backdrop. Now, simply, if we look at this story, there are elements to what we call epiphany. Epiphany has to do with kind of a surprise. Excuse me. Kind of a surprise because epiphany, the word epiphany, means kind of a showing. This is a demonstration or a showing or a revealing of. That's one meaning of it. And as a revealing of, we have in this story Jesus being revealed as the Messiah, Son of God, as the Redeemer for the whole world. Okay? That's what the Epiphany is. That Epiphany for the Magi happens to have steps. The first step is that long before they even hear about Jesus, they know that something big is going on over in Israel, and they've heard of the prophets. They obviously have a religious background, whatever it is. But they know the traditions around them enough to be aware that something is going to happen. And as the prophets have said, you will come, a star will lead you, etc. And they say, there is the star, which was in that time a sign that someone special had been born when a new star appeared in the sky. That was a natural, normal kind of experience, astronomically, shall we say. The people attached that new star to some event on Earth. And so here they saw this new star and they said, aha, the scriptures have been right. So let's pursue this star. And their openness allows them to go on this search. And they travel and travel and travel through the desert, all across the Sahara Desert, to get where they finally come to recognize this Jesus is truly the newborn king. Excuse me. So, bye, guys. Bye, Chris. Bye. Bye. So they start their journey. And in starting their journey, that all that long way, the journey is the process by which they came to understand a lot of things. So that by the time they got to the manger, they were able to see and recognize what had only been talked about in their past. So that whole journey was a preparation for that moment of recognition. And when they came, they gave gifts, which is what you do when a newborn comes into the world. But these are very special gifts. The gold is for royalty. The frankincense is for spirituality. The myrrh is a sign of life after death. And so these three gifts given by these kings, supposedly kings, these guys have already understood in their gift-giving who this child is going to become. And notice at the end of the story, they don't go back to the way they were. They went by another route, certainly, but they went back changed. And their lives had changed enough that they would influence in their time and in their space the people whose lives they were a part of. This is kind of a little microcosm, if you will, of the whole journey of all of us who seek to be people of faith. Think about this. It begins with an openness to the possibility of something different. It takes a journey of getting there and learning to be aware when it does happen so that you will recognize it. And once you recognize it, your life is so changed that you can't help but affect the world around you. How does that apply in our day? Well, very simply, I came up with a few examples, very simple examples. One of them is, you come to an awareness and suddenly you have new knowledge that you can send out to other people. I talk about my granddaughter, who in her first year of studying Latin depended on me a great deal for some help. And when she came and I understood that there was a problem, I gave her a little instruction. I talked to her about parsing a sentence. You know how to diagram a sentence? And we all learned that. Well, they don't learn that in school anymore, as far as I know. She didn't. And so I taught her how to diagram a sentence, and it occurred to her, bright like a snap, she said, oh my God, that every sentence has a subject, a verb, and some object on the other end. Basic stuff. That made so much sense to her, she texted immediately all her friends and said, you gotta listen to this. And so she wrote this whole thing out, and now they gather together at the beginning of class one day, and they work out these diagrams. And they were all very happy because they finally understood what they were supposed to be looking at in these Latin lines. That there is a subject, a verb, and a predicate, and all the modifiers after that. Their lives changed. And they told other people about it. So, very simply, a little simple thing like, aha, made a difference in their lives. And one of the things I talk about lots of times when I'm working with couples who are getting married, I usually challenge them. Because, you know, most couples come and they have no idea of what they're doing. They really don't. I mean that very sincerely, because most of them come in with a preconceived notion of course you have to have Pachelbel's Canon to start. And then you have to have 1 Corinthians 13 on love. And then you have to have a special kind of candle ceremony that doesn't make any sense to anybody. And then you're supposed to have vows that, of course, you have traditional vows because our parents want traditional vows. And then you walk away at the end with a little bit of Mendelssohn as you go out the door. That's what they come in with. And so to dispel all that, say, you don't have to do those cookie cutter things. There's a lot more to it than that. Let me challenge you. And I challenge couples to do this. You both believe that you're unique people, right? You're 2 individuals, very unique individuals. That means there's nobody else like you. You may find somebody that looks like you, but they're not like you. You're a unique individual with unique gifts. Both of you, as individuals, have brought to the world something that nobody else will be able to bring. Do you know what that is? And when you've figured that out, then understand that the 2 of you marrying are going to be a unique couple, never to be repeated in any way. And what is it that you are bringing to the world as a unique couple? How is your love different in the way it's going to affect the world around you? And most of them, their chins drop. And then when they talk about it a little bit, you know, they think, well, maybe there's something to that. And very interestingly, the ones who take it seriously and who do that end up with wedding ceremonies that everybody goes, oh, wow. Because they end up revealing something about themselves. You've invited all these people who know you, or at least are related to you in some way, and they're going to listen to you. When you choose a reading, let it be something that is saying about you. If you're choosing a song, don't choose Ave Maria. Find a song that is going to say something about you to the people you've gathered. And when you do your vows, keep in mind that the people hearing those vows are going to be affected by what you say. And by the end of that ceremony, I say to everybody in the blessing, brothers and sisters, I give you a whole new experience of God. This is your sacrament for today and for all time, right here, right now. Mary and George are your sacrament. And people get kind of blown away by that. But the reality is, in a tender, very sensitive, I think, where we are all very, what's the word I want, vulnerable moment, because everyone who attends a wedding is confronted by a relationship, and we all have relationships. Not necessarily marriage relationships, but relationships with one another, with other people, coworkers, people we meet on the street, the neighbors. We are all related somehow. We relate to each other. And all of that is focused on these 2 people. And how can you walk away from a moment that is that sacred and that vulnerable without somehow having it change the way you see yourself in the world, in your little world? If you're open to it, you learn along the way. And when you have that epiphany that, oh my God, that's something about me, your life can change. All of us have had moments like that. I've shared with you so many of the special moments in my life where I didn't know what I was doing, and I kind of opened myself up to God and ended up going where I didn't expect to go. In fact, places I did not want to go. And I ended up there, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. Those kind of moments are there every day. Epiphany is not something that happens once in a lifetime. And I know it's very hard for us sometimes to know that, or to acknowledge that, or to even play with the possibility that God is saying something to me today. That right now in this moment where I happen to be, God may be speaking to me. If I'm not prepared to hear it, I will never hear it, I will never experience it, and nothing will change. And what we are left with is the boredom of everyday life. Assuming that everybody is the same as they were yesterday, assuming that nothing ever changes unless something drastic happens, assuming that there's more to life in every moment than just getting through from this minute to that minute and getting by and working your way to a weekend where you can put your feet up or rake your leaves or cut your grass or do something a little different where you don't feel a lot of pressure. I don't think we were created to live for weekends. I don't think our lives are supposed to be surrounded by the hope that we will make it to a vacation. I think every moment has possibility. Now, I know I don't do it, but I'm the one preaching. So I can tell you, every moment of your life, there's a possibility that God may be trying to touch you. I believe it. I don't always experience it, but we try. So when you think of this little scene over here, beautifully done, Skip. Beautifully done. Skip is our designer. When you think of that little scene or you think about We Three Kings, remember it's not about majesty and glory and all that. It's about discovery in the moment. Open to the moment that new face approaching you may somehow change your life. That next corner may be the turning point. Your next thought may open you up to something that you only dreamt of knowing, but now you have a different vision. That's what Jesus being born, that's what divine revelation means. He reveals God. God is being revealed through each one of us. Right now, Tegan's revealing something to his grandmother over there. I see you over there. It's that simple. And poor Phoenix has gone to sleep. Isn't that wonderful, Norma? Don't let the beautiful moments lose. Don't lose sight of those things. Those are the things that make a difference between real life and existence. It's just a thought for Epiphany. God bless. Amen.